station number 22623, Wheel 3.
Nearly Trail 3.
And there, we'd set off from camp by platoons. You know, by that stage, we were in platoons, three platoons through a company and in companies. And I can remember the platoon commander's name. It was a Cambridge undergraduate that had been a Lieutenant Barnard, very nice chap. And we used to load up in platoons, so that was three sections, and the first bloke would have a sack of cement on his shoulder, and then you'd have picks and shovels and things to take with you, so that was three bags of cement, three things, and that sort of thing. And away we'd start under the, at that particular stage, we had a Royal Barks sergeant in charge of us at the time, regular soldier, very efficient soldier. We learnt excellent drill from him, and off we'd set. And we'd go so far, and while you're still miles, the whistle would blow, and the bag of cement was passed to the next chap behind you. And that's how you had your weapons as well to carry with you, and of course you have a sack with your daily ration with it, and you'd mark to the spot on the beach where you were to work from that day. And of course, it's a beautiful beach, sandy beach. Beautiful. I think in peacetime, they used to drive and test cars out, these cars out on it for speed. And there you would start. And the first, you'd line up with the spades, and that's how it used to start. And you would dig like hell. You'd dig it, hacking out. And then the next lot, the sergeant would blow the whistle, you'd drop your spade, and the next lot of chaps. And that's how, you know, it had to be. You'd do like hell. You dug like a slave train. That's how it went. And eventually, of course, the other people, it came the time for mixing up the cement and that sort of thing. But the trouble was, you couldn't wait too long, because the sand used to, the hole you dug would, you know, would sort of fill in again, sort of thing. But always remember one day, and this remember in my mind, and this concerns Winston Churchill. One day we were there, and you looked all up the coast road, and we saw this very lonely place it was up there. There's only this one YMCA children's camp. And we saw this retinue of cars and things coming. You say, what on earth is it? It came along the coast road. Stopped on the coast road, and lots of brass and tabbed hats all got out the cars, and a gentleman in his suit. He wore a all-in suit, his cigar, and I, at that stage I didn't know much about Churchill, did I? I mean, I think so, anyway. And his retinue, when you see them talking on the road, they were, and looking down, and obviously he looked across, and he'd obviously says, what are they doing? You know, basically, that's what we thought. What's he doing there, sort of thing? But, and you could see that they weren't really interested in him walking or coming over. But you could see the attitude. Yes, he came over. You know, but say, no. And he walked over. He walked up to the sergeant and introduced him and said, what are you doing? You see? And he told him. He said, and I always remember him saying, you know, well, any problems, what you? And this sergeant, he had problems. And he told him, you see the camp up there you just come from? I said, no, he said, we haven't got this. It takes us so long to get here and that sort of thing. And, you know, we have to carry everything down from there at the time there. I mean, and he turned around. I can remember him turning around to the few brass and top and that had come down with him. He says, is that a fact? He said, well, yes, the situation is, he told me we've only got an ice cream wagon up there, and that's an old thing, and that has to go to threats and rations and that sort of thing. Camp commanders, and we've got two companies, there's only one car between two company commanders, whole car, you know. We have to carry everything. We also have to, after this, and get back at night time when the air raids, and in those days, when it went, you were out. I mean, you know, there's no question how near it was or the area. You were out, and, you know, and waiting outside, laying on the ground on the beach and that sort of thing. But, he said, things will alter. And away he went. 3 days later, crossed down the same road, there was this line of lorries came. And that was Churchill. I mean, nothing had been done, and there you are, we'd have, God knows when we'd have had time. There you are, we were up there on the coast.
So these lorries were for
you? We all had a rifle. There was 5 rounds of ammunition between one section. I mean, you just laid there and, you know, pretended, really. That's how it was at that stage. Now, of course, that was, I say, that was May getting on into June, July. We were there right up until, I think it was August or September. And then we were relieved. Yes, well, it must be well into September or October. And we were pulled back, and our first billets, and that's, of course, we had no leave or anything then, but we went back to Bladen. And that's where we were billeted in Bladen, the other side of Newcastle. And from there, of course, we were eventually interned, all allowed leave.
So this is the 17th Fusiliers?
Yes, this is the 70th Battalion of Royal Fusiliers. Now, and if I can retract, the other two that had been on that, the other two trains had taken one lot, who went eventually found themselves in Ireland, I think it was the 18th, and the 16th down to Devon. That's how, on that one day from King's Cross, that's where those three went. We had an interesting point. Our colonel at the time was a Lieutenant Colonel Gaslett. He was an MP Hounslow. He had been called up back again, and he was a toy train enthusiast. You know, all the, yes. And that's all. He'd had the Pioneers make a beautiful trailer and truck, and all his toy trains were all electric trains on it. And basically, I mean, I have to say it, he was hopeless. He was the most, you know, ridiculous thing. Later on, when we moved down. Now, well, I'm getting a bit beyond myself. Let's go back to Bladen. From Bladen, we were all allowed home on leave, and we were allowed then to bring our wives or whoever back to Bladen to stay with us, providing that the company commanders had okayed the accommodation. And I took Gladys back with me when I came home on leave. Suddenly, and we were there up to Christmas. Suddenly, a few days before Christmas, we had orders to move to Monmouth.
What, by the way, was wrong with this Colonel Gaslett?
He had no, well, he was no soldier in that sense. In those days, they still were in the old, he used to wear his corduroy trousers and his gaiters and that sort of thing. But as a soldier, he was, well, oh dear. Well, later on, I mean, Templar, we had a General Templar come as divisional commander, and of course, you'll see later on why. But he used to come back and exercise us, and that his interest really wasn't in soldiering. He used to brag that in his unit that he could supply every known trade there was. We even had a pickpocket, you know, a safe breaker put there. But he could do that within amongst his trade. So he had a lovely trailer made for all his by the pioneer sergeant there. But it was absolutely useless as a colonel and as a soldier, particularly a wartime, because if we hadn't have had a very brilliant adjutant, Stormann, excellent adjutant. It was him basically that that controlled and you run the right from I say we come now. I've taken our wife back to that sort of thing, and billeted up there with in some nice billets with a fireman up there and his wife. They've just got a young child, and there we are. The most friendliest place ever to be.
Where's this?
This is Bladen and all the mining villages all the way around. It was absolutely ridiculous, really, on a Sunday, on a weekend, for the company cooks to cook meals. Everyone had been invited, and it used to become quite a problem. Of course, you had to provide guards. And you'd sometimes somebody come up to them and you say, "Oh, where's Fusilier so and so or Corporal so and so?" And you say, "Well, he's on guard duty." "Oh, he's supposed to be up at our place for lunch and dinner for him," you know, sort of thing. And they couldn't understand really that although we weren't really soldiering in that sense, we still had duties to do. But the most friendliest folk, they really were. At that stage, of course. And while we were there, the Dunkirk business was going on, and a lot of people, soldiers, were being taken straight up to there. And it was pitiful to see them. Some of them that were coming off the trains and that sort of thing. You couldn't even peel their socks off of there. Their skin was coming off with their socks. They were so bad. But it was absolutely gorgeous. We didn't have much of that, but we on one or two occasions we had to go and help.
You mean they're exhausted?
Yes, as they were on the train. But I don't know where they were. They eventually went and were put out from there. That was nothing to do with us. But we were all the people, you know, so to talk about them. It was very, very friendly, extremely friendly up there. And of course Christmas was coming. Well, of course every unit, of course, deals with NAFI, as you know, and that's how it went. And all the additionals and extras of things have to be got from NAFI. And of course our arrangements for the Christmas, which of course, as you know, as the traditions are always carried out, and they were certainly carried out in those days when the officers and the warrant officers and the NCOs have to wait on the men and that sort of thing. Everything, of course, had been ordered up in Northern Command with the NAFIs and that sort of thing. Suddenly, just prior to Christmas, out of the blue, we were ordered to move to Monmouth. No time to make any arrangements about putting wives or anything on trains or anything, pack up and go. So, of course, we arrived in Monmouth the day before Christmas. And we were put in. We arrived in Monmouth. It took an enormous time to get there, days to get to Monmouth, really, in time, because every time there was an alarm, the troop trains were pulled into sight and so on. Eventually, we arrived at Monmouth during the early hours of the morning, and they marched out in off the train and up to Monmouth, out on towards the Abergavenny Road. And on the Abergavenny Road was the old workhouse that hadn't been used for 50 years. And the water, pure water, put down the walls, the moisture and that sort of thing. And that's where the 70 ton and fusiliers were put into this workhouse. Terrible place. Now, the people in Monmouth objected. They'd always had the Royal Engineers base there. And we were a London mob, and they didn't like Cockneys. Now, for part of the time in that time, Monmouth sort of is in England and sometimes in Wales, isn't it? There's something like that sort of thing for a period of time. Well, when a unit moves to a different area, on arrival there, you've got no orders. Or from the corps or the command or that you've gone into, no instructions, basic instructions, have to be issued down through brigade to battalion and then down to companies. So basically your first day or two there are basically free days. You've got no particular duties to do. And the obvious thing, the units allow you, if there is a town and out sort of thing. And all troops are the same, and they were Cockneys. The first thing they thought about, where was the fish and chip here, and this and that sort of thing. And I always remember walking down. By that time, I was a Lance Sergeant. Yes, very quickly. And you're going to say, you asked me earlier on, why did I feel, was I enthusiastic or something? Well, by that time, I'd made up my mind. One of my friends called into that lot there was people from university, and there was one particular chap from Wimbledon who was from a rich family, and he was a university chap. And he was a lovely chap, and he and I had become pals. We vied with each other as to who got the first strikes and so on. And I made up my mind, and there I was, very, very different circumstances to him. But I made up my mind that I would do as well as he did as he went on. And sometimes I was ahead of him in a stripe, and sometimes ahead of me. But he, of course, eventually knew that he would go into it for octave. But that's the sort of thing. Well, I'm going to be as good as him. I may not have the schooling or the upbringing, that sort of thing. But that's why I made up my mind that I would be a bloody good civilian soldier. And that's what I did. And I achieved that in that sense. And I say, by the time we moved to Monmouth, there I'd got to a Lance Sergeant. So I'd got one stripe, two stripes, and not a full sergeant, but a Lance Sergeant. You had to do that for a time in those days. And then later on, when you became a sergeant, you had to do it unpaid for a while and then become war substantive. So our Christmas day was spent there. They did the best they could, but of course, with what they could, but it wasn't a very good one. And it was a very wet and cold at the time and snowy. And our task was to keep the Abergavenny Road, Monmouth Abergavenny Road, clear from snow so that food could go up through to the people. And there again, all we had basically to do, we had no shovels or that sort of thing, we had entrenching tools. We used to go out in the morning, spend out all day, and you'd come back wet through and put the same clothes on that's in the morning or wet again. But we kept the Abergavenny Road open by that means. Eventually, and our task while we were there was mobile troops. Should there be a call out, there was coaches laid on to take you from one place to another. And Cardiff got bombed for the first time while we were down there, and they had no AK guns or anything. They did after, and that's one of the places we had to go and help the people in. Well, they were pulling the prams with the little kids in the outer house and that.
What did Cardiff look like under the bomb?
We went there on the first time. It was only a slight raid, but then after, of course, they got all this AK stuff and going there. So that was the first raid that Cardiff had. A few planes over. Anyway, from Monmouth, we were then, as units went out from divisions, so others had to come in. Now, we didn't have a very good time at Monmouth. You'd go and line up behind a cinema, and they'd come out and put a full board there, because, you know, we weren't paid much in those days. And a barber's shop, they didn't want to know. And a lot of the pubs wouldn't have you in the pub. Wouldn't serve you. We were Cockneys. We lost two blokes between the two troops, loads of troops that there. We were Cockneys. They didn't like Londoners and Cockneys, who were stabbed in a fight between the. But anyway, that's beside the point. That we We then had a move, and we were moved. The Canadians at that time, of course, were manning the area of the coast all along Brighton and all New Haven and all that area. And you know, there were French troops in the French Indo troops in. They were very unruly troops, and they were being taken, ordered up to Aldershot for discipline. And as you know, may well know, they always brought a battalion of the Black Watch. That's about the only battalion that could knock any sense and keep them, which they did then. So we were taken over from the Canadians, who were moving, and they move up to the Aldershot area. And I was one of the lucky ones that went on advance party with our Lieutenant Barnard. He's a very nice chap. And we moved up, and we were in Brighton, billeted at Preston Barracks for about 3 weeks before the division and all everybody else, 70th London and the 17th Division, moved up to the area to take over. And our job was to go round the billets for you, like it always is, and see them and that sort of thing, and basically to take them off when the rest moved out. And, oh dear, I think while we were at Preston Barracks, there was a red cap funeral nearly every day for these French troops. You know, terrible they were.
A red cap funeral?
Yeah, funeral. Mm.
You mean military policemen killed?
Yeah.
By the Canadians?
Yes, oh, they were terrible. These French troops, they were French-Canadian troops, terrible troops. I particularly witnessed one day them, opposite the barracks at Preston Road, there was a fish and chip shop. I saw it, and one bloke up one day and a slinger straight through the plate glass window. They were terrors.
What for?
Arguments, drink. And the guard room, to walk into their guard room at night when you came back, Christopher, you'd look through a haze of smoke and say, well, whose rifle's this leaning over? It's this wall outside here. Oh, they were terrors. Anyway, I say the division, 47th Division, had moved then to take over from, and we were then on the south coast, and we had troops all around that area. And from there, of course, we started doing exercises, big exercises and that sort of thing. Montgomery then, as you know, was Southern Corps commander, that sort of thing. From places, we eventually moved to different areas and that sort of thing. And eventually we moved to the Hailing and Brighton area.
And Hailing Island?
Yeah. And we were the commanders who had been there. They moved away, and that's we took over their duties. They'd moved the people out from the Hailing on. Then it was a much different place there. And our task there was the Home Guard. Really, at night time, used to come up and man the gun positions that were there. And I always remember there was the gun there. And there was 5 rounds of ammunition with each. Yes. And there was, always remember, there was 3 hotels there at that time on the coast. They all joined up together, and we were in one of them. And there was one pub there that allowed that to stay open, which was our sort of place. And that's where we were. We used to do exercises and drill on the sand dunes and that sort of thing. One day, one afternoon, a jerry plane came over and strafed us, but fortunately it didn't catch any of us. From there, we moved, and it was in the Brighton area. I had gone on a course with the guards for Vickers guns and that sort of thing. And when we moved from there, we moved up to Nutley and Lewis area, Cutfield, and back towards Hayfield and Grinstead area and that sort of thing. Our particular battalion went to Chapelwood Manor, and there we were stationed there. And while we were there in this Chapelwood Manor, the big house was turned into a reception centre for officers awaiting to be transported out to Far East. And I was put in there, and at that time, I think the Café de Paris had been bombed, and the band there, although they thought they would, you know, wouldn't be called up, the band was then called up to join the forces and went into the forces. And we had 5 or 6 members of the band come to the 17th Battalion. And that sort of thing. And while we were there, I went into, I was put into the officer's mess sergeant for discipline sergeant. They had some waiters, Greek waiters, and I was a horrible chap, always remembering. He couldn't get him to wash his feet or change his socks and that sort of thing. So we used to literally have to throw him in the bath and scrub him down, that sort of thing. But I went into that to discipline the staff in there. Because we had, some stages, around about 60 or 70 officers there. And now then, it was coming back to there that General Templer arrived to take over, who was like the Field Marshal, take over the division. And of course, we had exercises from there, going out in the coaches and exercising, big exercises, which the brass knobs used to come down and watch on the coast and that sort of thing. And Gazlitt was there, and he used to come back off his exercises and go straight up to his room upstairs and start switch on and his trains, you know, sort of thing. And Templer, you were either good or you were bad with Templer. He did no nonsense with Templer. He was an excellent one of the finest generals that I've come across. And he had him moved very, very quickly after he found and sort of saw his not very efficient inclination to be a battalion commander. They suddenly went, and we had a fellow come there, Gus Ray, the Colonel Gus Ray. He was a fusilier regular. And he was the oldest man in the battalion, but from him, you really had a soldier. He knew how to train soldiers, and he did it. And his wife ran one of the mobile houses. Wherever he got moved within this country, she got transferred too. And she used to have to come to an O group orders and get her orders when we were out on exercises and get her orders. Well, because when she brought her mobile canteen up to an area in which we were doing exercises, she had to camouflage her thinking and get under the trees or wherever, you know, because that's how you're trained. You never just flopped down on the road and you know, the side of the wagon all went up. You went up singly up to the, you know. So he practiced soldiering right from the word go, and that's how he brought the troops up, you know. And when you went out on an exercise, we later on became a postgraduate training company when we got to Market Raising in Lincolnshire, in which a whole load of troops would arrive at Osgosby Moor camp, and you'd meet them, and they'd bring them there to this Osgosby Moor camp. And at the same time, some officers from an OCTU would arrive, and they'd be sorted out to this, and that was a platoon in which they would eventually train with and go abroad and transferred and go out with. But and that's from that time. I don't know why, but whenever there was a course on, I used to get sent on. Eventually, after I did a stint in the, and I went back to units, and we moved away. We moved up to Middle Wallop Aerodrome, up to Danesbury Ring there. When I was, of course, going, I was always sent there. I went all over the places.